Music has no boundaries. Bob Marley, The Beatles, plus call-in radio equals a bridge over troubled waters for Israel stroke Palestine. Radio broadcasters, don't respect borders or walls. Told for the very first time the real story of 93.6 RAM FM, a pioneering English language radio station in Palestine stroke Israel, starting from the ground up in perhaps the most difficult geopolitical environment, to the eventual launch and the impact it made by sharing narratives of the other with music. The whole story was brought together by a man who was at the beginning of the radio. He eventually became a radio peace envoy, an ambassador as well. Delighted to be joining me live on the line, Rafa Ganjat. Rafa, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jais. Pleasure to be with you.
Good to have you with us. Tell us a little bit about then where the idea for having an English music stroke talk radio station, where exactly was it based?
Okay, let me give you some context here. I think it was destiny that played a hand here. You know, I grew up in apartheid South Africa. The person who came up with the idea also grew up in apartheid South Africa. The person who the idea came from was a man called Izzy Kirsch, a South African Jewish media icon. And what he did in South Africa during the worst days of apartheid, he set up a radio station called Radio 702, which meant that black, white, colored Asians could meet on the radio station and talk about common issues. And fast forward now to 2003, I was a South African ambassador sitting in Palestine, and I get a call from Izzy Kirsch. I want to meet you in Tel Aviv. So I meet him in Tel Aviv, and I said, how can I help you? Because I know the guy. He went on to set up 4 radio stations, 500 cinemas. It's all in the book. And he became the media icon of South Africa. So I sat with him, and I said, okay, Izzy, what do you want me to do? He says, I want to set up a Radio 702 kind of radio station and get Palestinians and Israelis to talk in a common language, English. And I said, what a great idea. I mean, I'm doing this as a diplomat. I'm trying to, you know, support the peace process, which was happening at that time. And that's where the whole thing started from. And we got a license from the Palestinian side. We set up a studio in Ramallah, a studio in Jerusalem. And we started. And it was an amazing radio station. I don't want to tell the whole story of what the book is all about, but yeah. For the first time, I'm telling the story of how we went about to set it up. It was quite a struggle, and we launched. And the most amazing thing was when we launched, the day we went on air live for the first time, we were live on CNN. The whole world saw us on CNN, a radio station in English, the first English radio station in Palestine and Israel, creating a bridge between warring Semitic cousins.
When I host a phone-in show on a Tuesday between 10 and 12, and when I throw open the lines, sometimes I have no idea what is going to come back at me. And when you threw open the lines on that first day at RAM FM, what are you expecting, and were you prepared for people to engage?
Okay, I mean, the person who launched the radio station was, he's late now, he was a South African talk show icon, John Birds. In the beginning, I was just, the consultant, because of my diplomatic contacts, I got the license, I started putting everything together. But I had worked in radio before becoming a diplomat. I worked in the music business, in the rock and roll business, I managed rock bands after university, and then I worked in the music business. I mean, it's all day in the book. And I sat back and put it all together. And then one morning, what happened was the regular morning guy was not available. And 20 years later, 20 years before, I played vinyls and we did, tapes and all that kind of stuff. I had no idea how to do a radio talk show using a computer and using a mouse and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So I asked somebody the day before, just train me, and they trained me. And the next morning, I came on air. and I did the show for the guy called Mike. And we had a consultant sitting in Sydney on Australian radio listening, and she called the Izzy Kirsch, the owner of the radio station, and says, I like the guy in the morning. He should do the morning show. And Izzy then says, but that guy was the ambassador, and his wife is now the station manager, and he cannot, and she was his assistant before. So Izzy called me that night, and he said, listen here, Shannon loves you to death, and, you know, can you do the morning show? I said, why not? You know, the morning show and what we were trying to do was far more important than my ego. And from an ambassador, I landed up doing the morning show. And yes, in the beginning, there was this hesitancy when we threw open the lines because it was something novel, it was something different. So what I did was I had the three-hour morning show from 9 to 12. So to get people involved, from 9 to 10, every morning I played what I call the classic 9 at 9. We played 9 songs with a link. For example, 9 songs with the animal link, Buffalo Soldier, Crocodile Rock, you know, stuff like that. So people would listen on the last song, the first caller with the correct answer got a prize. So that's how we brought the listeners in daily, new link. People were stuck in traffic, people were driving around, and this was challenging, it was fun, and the classic 9 and 9 brought people in. And then thereafter, I did the real talk show, the political talk show, Talk at 10. And I guess I was the right guy to do it because I could cross over. I could go, if I had Israeli guests, I'd work in the Jerusalem studios. If I had Palestinian guests, I'd work from the Palestinian studios. And for the first time, we could have a guest sitting in the studio and both sides calling in, talking to the guest, and we had amazing discussions. And the interesting thing was I had a motto, or let's say I insisted that your enemy is a person whose story you've not heard. So let's hear all the stories, because that's what we did in South Africa. Eventually in South Africa, basically we brought the South African experience to this part of the world. In South Africa, in the end, from the right wing to the left wing, Mandela got everyone to sit around a table and we solved our problem. It was an all-inclusive problem. And the same approach we used. I had left wingers, right wingers, racists, all kinds of people on my show. And as you know, as a radio person, you have the 30-second delay. So I had two rules. No hate speech, no incitement. You cross those boundaries, I cut you off. And we had the most amazing discussions. And we got people to talk to one another through me. And both sides were hearing the other's narratives. And it was incredible.
Do you think that you know, that having come from South Africa with its situation and the changes that were made there, that gave you the grounding to tackle what? Because if you think of Israel and Palestine, a lot of people will immediately think extremism and no bridges being made, no common ground. But because you have the team there, and I've seen pictures of you all having a braai somewhere in the streets, yeah, by the way, which looks like a lot of fun. But because you had the South African experience, you were able to apply those lessons that you learned there to an outsider, perhaps, sitting here in Southern Europe, might seem an impossible thing to do.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, okay, let me just go back a bit. You know, as a South African, I grew up in apartheid South Africa. We were segregated according to race and color, black, white, Asian, and colored. We live segregated lives, legally enforced boundaries, and so forth. But what happened in my youth, you know, as I say, music has no boundaries. There was LM radio broadcasting from Mozambique on shortwave. And the South African apartheid regime made sure that white South Africans were dished out a fair of conservative music, and black South Africans were given ethnic music, and we Indians and coloreds, we didn't really have any music. So we were all listening to LM radio, and we were all being fed a diet of rock and roll. And what happened then is, it really helped us because, as I say, music has no boundaries. The few or rare occasions I met people who were white and we were living separate lives, but we'd meet and we had something common to talk about. Like I'd meet white people and we'd talk about our common music taste, which came from LM radio. And now fast forward, in the year 1979, I went to an English university in Pietermaritzburg, At that time, apartheid South Africa, we had four universities according to race, white, black, Asian, and colored. I went by special permission to study a black language at a white university, an English university. Now that story is in the book. And immediately I found in music the ties that bind. Wonderful friendships were formed. But this is where my whole experiment started. I had four university friends, one from Scotland, one from Dallas, one from Durban, one from Johannesburg, and they formed a rock and roll band. I thought they were quite good, and I became their manager. And we had no idea what it was all about, so we went and bought some sound equipment on installment. And then we found nobody wanted to use us. Nobody wanted gigs from a rock and roll band that played original music. We went to all the white nightclubs. If you can play covers, okay, you're in. You can't play covers, we don't want you. And that's where we broke boundaries. We started playing in an Indian, a supper club for Indians. We played in a bar for black workers. And the story is all in the book. We played for coal miners at a coal mine, a black coal miners, four white rockers in apartheid South Africa playing in a coal mine, that kind of stuff.
That must have been a scary gig.
Oh, it was. The whole story is in the book. It was incredible, one of the highlights of my life. And that led me then to, because all in all, I learned at university, music has no boundaries. It's a universal language. It transcends race, class, color divides. It unites us all. By the end of the year, then I landed up at the Battle of the Bands contest in Johannesburg. And what happened was the army called the two South Africans. And, you know, it was conscription. And they left the country and they went off to London. So the band broke up. But I started working in Johannesburg. So my experiment at university, we went on to the bigger experiment. Now, you must have heard of South African band called Juluka, which went on to become Savuka. And Savuka once had a concert in, I brag about this, I worked with them, a concert in Paris. Michael Jackson had to cancel because Savuka outsold him. And so I worked with, this was a crossover band. And interestingly, the black guy who was in the band came from my hometown. I spoke his language as well, Sipho Mkhunu. So I worked in the music business, and there was this whole movement of crossover music taking place at that stage. And then I got involved, and then I left the music business, and we know later what Paul Simon did with the Gracelands album. He went to South Africa, used all the South African musicians, and he crossed boundaries with all this music. Ladysmith, Black Mombasa, Ray Peary, Stimela, all these guys. And we know the Grayson album, what happened. And then I quit the music business. The whole story is in the book. And I did my master's, my MBA. And then to borrow from Bob Dylan, the times they were changing. I became a diplomat, right? From the music business and all that, I became a diplomat. And my first posting, I landed up in Los Angeles. And
yes.
I caught up with all the rock and roll concerts that I wanted to watch all my life.
But Beverly Hills, I believe, was your first, your posting, which must have been a hellish assignment, Rafa.
Oh, it was hellish. And, you know, and then I had great fun there. I saw Bob Dylan, Bruce Springsteen. I saw the Rolling Stones in concert, you know, 80,000 people at the Los LA Coliseum, and it was great stuff. And then the next, all these lessons were now gelling in within me and myself. And then I went back to South Africa, things were changing. And for me, what was like the cherry on the top was when I was sent as ambassador to Abu Dhabi. And I landed in Abu Dhabi and Nelson Mandela came on an official visit. Now, what Mandela did was something most unique in the world. He took the national anthem of the apartheid regime and he took his national anthem and he combined them. Nobody has done that. So the night before, I sat with the army band from the United Arab Emirates telling them to play half and half. It was quite a battle because they said, nobody has ever told us to play half and half. We play this or we play that, right? And surprisingly, I finally convinced them. And Mandela had just, he came in from Bahrain. And he was really upset that in Bahrain, the band played only the old anthem.
The stem.
And when he arrived in Abu Dhabi, the band played both. Now, what he did was he united the people with music, healing the country with common and shared anthems. And Then you fast forward from there. I worked in South Africa for a while. I land up here in Palestine, and that's when I met Izzy Kirsch, and we set up Ram FM, and the rest is history. You know, our intent was not to solve the problem. All we desired was to facilitate dialogue. Like in South Africa, we sat around the table and we listened to all the viewpoints, and I mean, we sorted this thing out. And it worked amazingly well. We lasted on air for about just over a year. We built a huge, huge listenership on the Israeli side and the Palestinian side. We had a huge listenership on streaming. We had British, South Africans, Australians, Palestinians, Americans, South Africa, Israelis. We had a whole crowd. We called them the Ram FM family. And then the story is told for the first time. We got closed down, we went to prison, and that's the end of that story. Just a few years ago, the case finally got resolved, so that's why the book is a bit late. And then the last part of the book, after all that finished off, we suddenly had somebody who headhunted my wife, a guy from Switzerland called Jan Boxton. And he comes along and he says, what about a woman radio station? And my wife says, no, I don't want to go down that route again. And we now have a woman radio station called Nisa FM, which is the first and only women radio station in the whole Arab world, run by my wife. I did some initial setting up. I did some training with the presenters, but now I've sat back. So all in all, I can say, Giles, Ram FM crossed boundaries, built bridges at a time when walls of separation were being constructed between Israelis and Palestinians. And today, Nisa FM continues to bridge the divide between men and women in a patriarchal society.
Exactly. This is one of the things that what you're doing is giving a platform for voices that are overlooked to be heard. And that is vital if we are to move forward in any way, shape or form.
Yeah. And then, I mean, so in the end, I mean, I can say that, you know, it's my life's journey. Music Has No Boundaries has taught me that until this philosophy of one race or one gender is superior to another, is thrown into the trash can of history, we embrace our fellow humans as brothers and sisters, wars, pain, suffering will continue. And the only thing we can heal us is music, talk, reaching out to one another and finding one another.
When you work in radio, because radio is a very intimate medium, I always say this and I bore my listeners stupid with it, but, you know, because TV is like a four-year-old shouting for your attention, yeah. The internet is like a sulky teenager in its room doing something you're not quite sure of, but you hope it's going to be okay. But radio is a personal medium. And people,
I always say that. I couldn't agree more with you.
And people get an idea of, they know you because they listen to your voice, and the voice is a very intimate thing. When you were doing the show, all the presenters probably felt this on Ram and NASA as well. But there must be cases or stories or moments that completely blindside you, surprise you, and make you look because we think we know it all. We think we know our audience. It's the biggest ego trip in the universe. Let's be honest about this. Sometimes, what was a moment from either from Ram or from Nisa that has made you sit up, take notes, and go, you know, this is why I'm doing this. This is why I'm not in Beverly Hills anymore watching the Rolling Stones with 85,000 other people.
Yeah. Okay, guys, that's a really great question because I write about it in the book. In the early days of Ram, we said, okay, people win prizes. We want to see our audience. We want to learn from them. Because at any given time, I'd be sitting in a studio like how you're sitting, and we had this diverse audience on the Israeli side, Palestinian side, and across the world. So one day I was doing a show in Jerusalem, and suddenly two Israeli soldiers walked in with their guns. And the people in the studio, I mean, they were quite, what the hell's happening there? They came to see Raf, because according to them, Raf rocks and rolls every morning, and they were into me big time, especially with my morning rock and roll show. And when they saw me, they were not impressed because I didn't look like what they expected. They expected this long-haired, hippie kind of guy, and I look more Palestinian than Israeli. But this is the beauty of music. I called them into the studio. They sat with me, and the way we crossed things is I asked them, I said, you know, which genre are you guys into? You know, I grew up in the 60s, 70s. They went into the music of the 80s. So they sat with me in the studio. They put their guns against the wall. And everyone just forgot for that moment who's who in the zoo here. They sat with me. I did the rest of my show. They thoroughly enjoyed sitting with Raf while he's, you know, playing all this music and doing these crossovers and real DJ stuff. Just fascinating. They forgot they were soldiers. They forgot that I am not Jewish, I'm South African, Muslim, all that kind of stuff. And this, for me, was amazing. Then on a talk show, and this is also in my book, this is the height of the Gaza war. And rockets were coming in from Gaza into the southern part of Israel. So I told the producers, listen, I want to talk to somebody who's in the firing line of the rockets. And they said, no, you can't. That's an Israeli settler and our license. I said, no, I want to talk to him. He's a human being. So we got this guy, and I quote the whole story in the book. And so I approached it as a human being, and I said, okay, the rockets come. How long do you have? You have children. What happens? And he starts explaining, and we're talking like two human beings. You know, the rockets come. He's scared of his children. What happens and how they escape and all that. And then in the end, I threw in the question, so, okay, we've done your story. What do you think about the people on the other side? And I could have fallen from my chair when he said, I have friends on the other side. I call them every day on the phone and we talk. And this is what it was all about. People on both sides, your regular persons, they had no problem with the politics, right? We saw it with the music. Both sides love the music. Both sides love the talk shows. Besides the political talk shows, we also had simple talk shows. We had a guy, Martin B, he came from the Midlands of the UK. And he would go in the morning, he did the morning show later on. He would say, okay, all you women out there, call me in the morning and tell me what you have in your handbag. Right? And we'd have Palestinians, Israelis, everyone calling, you know, giving the whole spiel about what they have in the handbag. And suddenly both Israelis and Palestinian women were learning they have the same things in the handbags. You know, they have the lipstick, they have the phone, they have, and all of that kind of stuff. So this humanizing element with music, with talk shows, and that fascinated me more than what diplomacy has ever done to me in my life.
The book is called Music Has No Boundaries, Bob Marley, The Beatles, plus Call-In Radio equals Bridge Over Troubled Waters for Israel. That's the subtheme. It's by Rafiq Gangat, who we're speaking to today. By the way, why Bob Marley, The Beatles? Is it presumably because the whole world loves Bob Marley and The Beatles? I've always been told, when in doubt, play The Beatles.
No, what happened there? I'll tell you how that comes about. We got an amazing PR company in Israel to do a whole promotion for us now to build a bigger audience. And this company was really, really amazing. You know, I think I have it here. Maybe I can pull it out right here. So they created, I'll show it to you and I can see one of them. They created these passports.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right? I see it, yeah.
Yeah, dishing out. And if you open the passport, it's through passport stamps. You have a picture of Bob Marley.
Yep.
Right?
It's yep.
Passport stamp.
Got that.
And it says a man can be in more than one place at one time, but a song can. Music has no boundaries. And then they created one with Kylie Minogue. They did one with Elton John. And for the UK, they did the Beatles. Right? And the Beatles was... even though they have not visited every country, their music has no boundaries. And this was a very innovative way of us telling the greater public who we are, what we are. And this was dished out at the airports, in the cities. And suddenly our listenership like grew phenomenally with this campaign. And that's where this whole thing of Music Has No Boundaries really came from.
Ah, gotcha. Absolutely brilliant. The book is called Music Has No Boundaries. It's by Rafiq Gangat, who we'll be speaking to today. If people want to find you on the socials or on the website, I know you've got a website because I was looking at it earlier. Obviously, that's where I saw the Braai photograph. Where can they find you, Rafi?
Yeah, I mean, the website's Rafiq Gangat. It's RafiqGangat. And the book is available on Amazon and, you know, all the other, online bookstores.
And it will be also be available as a virtual download from our own virtual bookstore.
Okay, yeah. Thank you so much for that plug.
The book is called Music Has No Boundaries. Bob Marley, The Beatles, and plus Call-In Radio equals Bridge Over Troubled Waters. It's by Rafiq Gangad, who we're speaking to today. Rafiq, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you today.
It's my pleasure, Giles. And just to tell you that sometimes next month I'll be visiting your part of the world. I might pop in and say hello to you.
Be very careful. You might just get your own show, Rafiq Gangad. It's been great to speak to you this morning.
Thank you. Bye-bye.